So welcome, everyone. It's a beautiful late spring day. And we have a lot of our senior students here tonight because I believe there's going to be a meeting afterwards. And some of them have traveled quite a distance to be here, including my Jisha and Joanne from the Woodstock area. It's wonderful to see people making an effort to come in and collaborate as a Sangha and keep things fresh and alive at the Zendo. A couple of you might remember that I gave a talk last month on a relatively well-known koan where a monk asked Master Joshu, does a newborn baby have the sixth consciousness or not? And Joshu says, like a ball tossed on swiftly flowing water. And then the monk asks another teacher, what is the meaning of a ball thrown on swiftly flowing water? And that teacher replies, moment to moment, nonstop flow. And so I thought I would bring up what I regard as kind of a companion koan to that one, one which is even much better known than the first. And it has to do with Master Joshu when he was quite a young man, maybe 20 or 21, studying at the center of his teacher, Nansen. And Joshu asks, Nansen, what is the way? And Nansen says, ordinary mind is the way. And Joshu says, well, should I direct myself toward it or not? And Nansen says, if you direct yourself toward it, you turn away from it. Joshu says, well, if I don't direct myself toward it, how will I know it is the way? How will I know when I've got there? And Nansen says, the great way is beyond knowing and not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is just stupid blankness. If you attain the way of the Buddhas and ancestors, it's like great space, so open and free. How can the way of the Buddhas and ancestors have anything to do with right or wrong, knowing or not knowing? And at these words, Joshu was suddenly enlightened. And so I sort of draw a parallel in my mind between moment to moment, nonstop flow, and this ordinary mind that Master Nansen is talking about. Ordinary mind is the way. Well, okay, what the heck is ordinary mind? And how do I get it if that's the way? Well, the answer is kind of disappointing in a way. Ordinary mind is simply the mind that we study day after day on our cushions when we're doing our zazen. Of course, ordinary mind accompanies us throughout our day and through the night as well. But in zazen, we simplify things. We just sit. And we really have a chance to examine what this ordinary mind is. And when we do, even on the first day of Zazen, that we ever practice it, we discover something quite interesting. We encounter our ordinary mind, and here's what I noticed, and probably what all of you noticed as well. One of the first things I notice is that stuff just keeps coming up. Noises come up from the street and from in the interior. Sensations, pleasant and unpleasant, arise. And most of all, there are those darn thoughts, which I think I'm supposed to get rid of in order to be a good Buddha. But, you know, after a few years of frustration, we realize, oh, well, that's not going to happen. We realize that these thoughts that are bubbling up moment after moment are not in any way really different from the car horns honking, from the feeling of the fan and the air on our face. It's just the stuff that's coming up moment after moment, the nonstop flow. That's ordinary mind. And we're told this ordinary mind is the way. This ordinary mind that we cannot grasp. This ordinary mind where stuff just keeps happening and there doesn't seem to be room for either really delusion or enlightenment to get in the door there. The orchestra of reality just keeps playing. And is it inside us? Is it outside us? Does inside or outside even really, in this context, make any kind of sense? There's just this nonstop flow. It's our ordinary mind. It's the natural functioning of the mind of a human being. It's the natural functioning period. Stuff just keeps happening. Mental events, sensory events, pleasant, unpleasant stuff. It just moment after moment, nonstop flow. You know, we never really have a chance to notice it until we sit down and do our Zazen and take a look at the nature of the beast that we're dealing with. And what we find is the beast is just completely empty. By which I mean not that there's nothing going on, but that things just go on according to causes and conditions. There's no inherent essence to be realized. There's no enlightened platform to land on safely. There's no ground to get under our feet at all. So as we notice this nonstop flow and we become completely convinced of our powerlessness to change that state of affairs in any way whatsoever, because it's simply the nature of empty reality, the question naturally arises, well, all right, so okay, I see what's going on now. How does it help? How does it help to really understand that there is no basis to any of this, that there's no inside, no outside, there's no constant, steady little man or woman inside there experiencing all this stuff. There's just this nonstop flow, this ordinary mind of constant change, things happening in the moment, going out in the next nanosecond, and something new arising in the next second. How does it help to really realize this? How does it help to realize emptiness, for lack of a better word? Well, the Buddha himself tells us that the cause of our suffering is basically our desire for good stuff, our aversion to bad stuff, and our jaded boredom with stuff that's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So in the teachings, they have this old structure of consciousness that I mentioned last month. And the gist of it is that we have inputs through our six senses, the sixth sense being consciousness or mind, which synthesizes all the other five, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, etc. Creates sort of a coherent reality of life as a human being on planet Earth. But then as soon as we've done that, and that's not problematic, what's problematic in a way, and wonderful in a way, is there's the seventh consciousness, the seventh aspect of mind called manas. And manas is, loosely speaking, our emotion thought. So we get the inputs, we synthesize them, and then manas goes, whoa, I really like that. How can I get even more? And how can I make it last forever and make it all mine? And manas also says, oh, that's really, really, that's a downer. I don't like that. Ooh, that's delusion. That's ick. Get it away from me. And so we kind of spend our lives, unless we catch on to ourselves, trying constantly to ward off the bad stuff and to grab on to the good stuff. And what we notice when we really study our ordinary mind is that there is no stuff. And there's no one, there's no constant person who can either possess it or get rid of it. So when we really become aware of the nature of our mind, the nature of our Buddha mind or our ordinary mind or whatever you want to call it, our orientation to life and reality undergoes a gradual but subtle change. We become absolutely convinced of the futility of trying to ward off all the things we don't like. The futility, if you will, of reaching something called enlightenment, where none of that bad stuff ever gets in through the cracks. The futility of chasing after pleasure. The futility of wishing nothing ever will go wrong with the technology which enables you all to hear me and people at home to hear the Dharma talks. Okay, for those of you who are listening to the podcast, we're just undergoing a few technical difficulties. So, you know, there's an example of the whole ordinary mind thing, right? I was cruising along, making my points, and then kablooey, and that we paused for a few seconds or a minute or two, and then an adjustment was made, and now we're going on again. And that won't last either, the talk. I guarantee you and I promise you that the talk will end, especially wise to turn the gain down. Thank you. So traditionally, we say that when we realize ordinary mind, when we realize emptiness, naturally, aside from the thing falling off again, this is actually the best part of the talk. When we realize this, our ordinary mind, or maybe I should, a better word would be when we appreciate it and we stop looking at it as sort of some sort of obstacle to be overcome and scooped out of wherever we think it is, our head or wherever, and replaced with some brand new, wonderful, enlightened mind. As soon as we let go of all that monist stuff, our natural tendency is toward wisdom and compassion. The teachings, traditional teachings, tell us four kinds of wisdom arise. And also, we become aware of what they call the Buddha bodies, the bodies through which we're able to manifest the wisdom and compassion of our ordinary mind. Now I'm going to leave the wisdom aside for another talk. By then I'll have finally gotten some. But wisdom and compassion are not separate from these Buddha bodies. In other words, they're wisdom and compassion without manifestation are hardly worthy of the name. They're just ideas. So leaving aside the traditional four varieties of wisdom, what are the Buddha bodies that allow us to manifest the truth of this emptiness, of this ordinary mind of no self? And I'll refer you once again to your experience of Zazen. So we're sitting in Zazen, and maybe for a second or two, our mind is clear. And then a thought comes up or a sound comes in, whatever. We notice the thought. We let it go, and we return to our breath or to our koan or to whatever our practice is. So that clarity, which seems to be the background of all the stuff, that nice clear space, is called the Dharmakaya, the body of reality. Okay, and that's usually what people think of when they hear the word emptiness, but it's only one aspect of emptiness, which is that clear, empty space that things seem to arise from and fall back into, Dharmakaya. Then there is the thing which arises, a thought, a cough, a car horn, beep, and then that is what we call nirmanakaya, the emanation body, the emanation originally of the Buddha's own mind. In other words, there seems to be this vast empty space, dharmakaya, and there seems to be kind of a thing that arises into that empty space. That's the nirmanakaya, the thingness of experience. And then, very next second, it fades back into the dharmakaya. So those are two of the three. The third is what's known as the sambhogakaya, the body of bliss, the reward body. The sambhogakaya, the reason we appreciate it so much, the reason it feels so wonderful, is because as all these things arise, they've just got not even a nanosecond to be there. They have to be themselves with every bit of heart and mind and stuffness that they can be. They have to manifest fully in that space, which is even less than an instant. They have to show their qualities vividly, directly, freely, before they pass away in the next instant. So when we appreciate the sambhogakaya, that's when it feels like we're really looking at things for real with all this, out all this stuff. A lot of us, when we're doing a long retreat or even a zazen kai, we have the feeling that we've, quote, cleared our minds. And so, you know, people who have been on a long retreat like we're going to do next month, you know, we can sit on the porch and look at a tree. Look at that tree. Ooh, look at that leaf. Ooh, that leaf went that way. Ooh, that leaf went that way. And we really appreciate the miracle of our ordinary mind. That's the reward body of the sambhogakaya. These are the ways the Dharma is manifested in the world. And, you know, we talk about them as if they're different from each other. But as usual, we're just pointing to different aspects of the same thing. So that wonderful space, that dharmakaya, it has no existence except in relation to the stuff that comes up into it. So the thoughts which we're trying so busily to get rid of and never have ever again are actually creating that wonderful, empty, pure empty space that we come back to when we let go of the thoughts. And the unity of this emptiness and thingness, this dharmakaya and nirmanakaya, we see in the perfection of the sambhogakaya. So what the teachings tell us is that this ordinary mind of the koan, yeah, it's, you know, what subway do I take to get to Jamaica? But when we study it, when we study it and practice meticulously day after day after day, we discover that this so-called ordinary mind is nothing but the wondrous mind of the Buddha. That we are nothing but the emanation body of the Buddha. And thanks to being embodied, and thanks to our practice, we're able to engage with the world wisely and compassionately. And it's always a work in progress. There's no limit to how much you can see, to how much you can engage. But certainly, the most helpful thing is to just put aside the idea that you have any idea what wisdom and compassion are, and let your ordinary mind teach you moment by moment by moment. This is the commitment that we make when we practice, to be taught by our actual moment-to-moment experience, and not to grab hold so tightly to the concepts and all the ways we're told we're supposed to think and supposed to be and supposed to look, and concepts of what Buddhism looks like, what enlightenment looks like, who's deluded, who's wise, and just allow ourselves to be foolish and enjoy and practice the nonstop flow, which is our birthright as Buddhas, our birthright as human beings. Don't miss it. The karma that has brought you into this practice is so fortunate and so rare. Don't let a moment go to waste.